and recognize the word for sure. Yes,
open and let you see.
Because them get them meaning to.
Nice for down, nice for up.
Because them get them meaning to.
a fundamental solidarity of these peoples with the struggle of the Algerian people, its methods, and its objectives, unquote. Then he says, in relationship to the newly independent Guinea-Conakry that was then under the leadership of the Democratic Party of Guinea,
Secretary.
And its Secretary General, yes, Ahmed Secretary Ray, who's the Secretary General, there was strong affinity between the struggle there and the ongoing battles in Algeria. Guinea had stood up to the French imperialists in the vote, the so-called Lord Cadre, on September 28th of 1958. By voting to reject the neo-colonial scheme of Charles de Gaulle and opt instead for full independence on October the 2nd of 1958. Now, Ghana came to the rescue of Guinea after the French withdrew all technical support. They left the country administratively stranded. Nkrumah's government stepped in and loaned Guinea $25 million to enable it to continue with this revolutionary process. Now, Fanon, in the same article I had quoted from earlier, said that, quote, of the Guineans, he said, Guinea was likewise applauded, but was particularly applauded as being the first important consequence of the Franco-Algerian conflict. The comrade ministers of Guinea present at the conference have asked us to communicate to our government, the deep, meaning the Provisional Revolutionary Government of Algeria, the deep gratitude of the Guinean people to fighting Algeria. Now, in March of 1960, Fanon was appointed to Ghana as a representative of the FLN and the Provisional Government of the Algerian Republic, the GPRA. At the same time, the armed struggle inside the country was being strangled by the deployment of French troops and the capture and mass killings of revolutionary leadership among the Algerian people. Colonel Amarucci of the Walia 3, that's how they divided up the FLN, was sent to Tunis to explain the situation and was intercepted and killed by the French colonialists. Now, while in Ghana, Fanon worked to open up the southern frontier through Mali, and this is very important. Mali was then under the leadership of Modibo Keita, who was also an ally of Ahmed Secretary Ray and Kwame Nkrumah. They had formed the Ghana-Guinea-Mali Union in 1960. Now, according to Fanon, I'm quoting again from the same article, quote, he made contact with the Mali authorities and communicated his suggestions to the Algerian leaders, who decided to set up a third base south of the Sahara for the shipment of arms to the Walias 1 and 5. Unquote. Now, by 1961, the French imperialists were exhausted, and Algeria would become an independent state in 1962. So Mali and Ghana, as well as Guinea, played a monumental role in the liberation of Algeria. This is commonly not known and commonly not discussed or acknowledged by the mainstream historians as it relates to the Algerian liberation struggle. Then, of course, after the independence in 1962 of Algeria, Bembele visited Washington, and he met with John F. Kennedy. And John F. Kennedy tried to discourage him from traveling to Cuba to meet with the leadership of Fidel Castro and Che Guevara. Kennedy even told Bembele that the anti-Castro Cubans had a plot to shoot down his plane, so he shouldn't go to Cuba. But Bembele went anyway, and he got there and he met with the Cuban leadership. And this was very important as well, because in October of 1963, the Moroccan armed forces attacked Algeria in the so-called Tindouf campaign. And then later in the interview, Bembele said that, quote, our young army, fresh from a war of liberation, had no air cover or armored support. This is in response to the Moroccan invasion of Algeria to try to crush the Algerian revolution. The Egyptian president, Abdel Nasser, quickly provided us with air cover that we lacked, and Fidel Castro, Che Guevara, Raul Castro, and other Cuban leaders sent us a battalion of 22 tanks and several hundred troops, unquote. Then Bembele went on to say, he said that the United States was clearly behind the Tindouf campaign. That was the Moroccan invasion. We knew that the helicopters transporting the Moroccan troops were piloted by the Americans. He said the same considerations of international solidarity subsequently led the Cubans to intervene on the other side of the Atlantic in Angola and elsewhere later on during the 1970s, unquote. So this was a tremendous act of international solidarity and pan-Africanism in defense of the Algerian Revolution in 1963. Now, the previous year, in 1962.
We only have 5 minutes
okay.
left. And basically,
okay,
what I wanted you to sum up is the fact that I just heard Ralph Schulman state.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard this before on I think it was Dion Kimathi's show on KPFK.
Okay.
That you mentioned the fact that there was going to be a union between Mali, Ghana, Guinea, and they were bringing in Patrice Lumumba from the Congo. According
right.
to Ralph Schulman, Ben Bella was going to bring in, Algeria was going to be part of that particular union. Did you know about that?
I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't. Because of the history that they played, the very important role that they played in history. And I just wanted to mention briefly that in 1962, Nelson Mandela visited Algeria, and that was the place where he got military training. And then when he went back to South Africa, he was captured and imprisoned, and he didn't get out for another 27 and a half years as a result of a mass international campaign emanating from South Africa, but it was worldwide.
Worldwide,
it brought about
right.
his freedom in February of 1990. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Ben Bella was overthrown in 1965 as a result of an internal conflict within the FLN, and Harare Boumediene took over. And but Algeria continued to play a progressive role, as you mentioned. Also, the role they played in regard to the imprisonment of Moshe Shambe, who died in an Algerian prison. And then, of course, hosting the international section of the Black Panther Party between 1969 and 1972 was also very important. Unfortunately, there was a problem after 1972 with Eldridge Cleaver and the others. In Algeria, which caused their to be shut down. This was after the split in the Black Panther Party in 1971, but also wanted to mention in closing the Pan-African Cultural Festival of 1969, a whole
very important, very important.
August of 1969 that invited numerous people from throughout Africa and the African diaspora, people like Stokely Carmichael, Eldridge Cleaver, Hort Fuller, and many others attended that conference, Mary McCabe. It was a historic occasion,
and
it put Algeria
that,
on the map.
Could I say that Archie Shepp attended that? Archie Shepp, who is this show is named after, he attended that particular conference in Algeria, right?
Yes. So Ben Bella will definitely be missed. He continued to be a staunch critic of U.S. imperialism. He spoke out heavily against both U.S. invasions of Iraq, the one in 1991, and of course the one in 2003. And he was part of the elders of the African liberation movement of the post-World War II period.
All right, and I guess the last thing I wanted to clarify was the fact that, Nkrumah, unlike Frantz Fanon was brought to the United States, and he passed away, I think, in Washington, D.C. Kwame Nkrumah said he didn't want to go to the U.S., he didn't want to go to Paris, he didn't want to go to London, he wanted to go to the Soviet Union to be treated, and he didn't go
mm-hmm.
to get to the Soviet Union. He went to Romania, where he passed away because of his distrust of U.S. imperialism. I just want to clarify that.
Most definitely. That's very important. Now, a lot of the information we talked about in this interview comes from an article entitled Ahmed Ben Bella Inspired Millions Around the World. It's written by myself. It was published on April 17th, just this last past Tuesday. So people can get that article from panafricannews.blogspot.com. That's panafricannews.blogspot.com. That's the website of the Pan-African Newsletter.
And thank you very much for your contribution, and we will be talking to you sooner than later, and we will see you in the whirlwind. Take care of yourself.
Thank you so much for your time.
And Diasporic Music continues with Grover Washington Jr. and the Inner City Blues. Makes me wanna holler, and you too.
me on the hamnas. Monday, we made it. Yeah, but before we see it, they take it. Yes, to make you wanna holler right on home. The way they do your life, make you wanna holler right on home. The way they do your life. Inflation means there ain't no chance and to increase a little bit of finance. And bills, they're gonna pile up the sky. And send that boy off to die. Yes, to make you wanna holler around the way they do.
Tat-tat-tat-tat was the only sound, yeah. Bring on the stone rifles to knock down walls. Bring on the elephant guns. Bring on the helicopters to block out the sun, yeah. Made the devil wanna holler, cause eight was dead and a dozen was down. And cries for freedom were a brand new sound. New York, Chicago, Frisco, L.A. Justice was served and the unjust were afraid. Cause after all the years and all the fears, brothers were alive, the courage found, and spreading them goddamn blues around. Yeah, make you wanna holler, black people, and hold up both your hands and say liberation.
Sometimes and throw up in both your hands.
Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. And we were listening to the music of Marvin Gaye, performed by Gil Scott-Heron and Grover Washington, Jr. We heard Marvin Gaye's Inner City Blues, Make Me Wanna Holler. And Gil Scott-Heron, of course, was born in Chicago, and his father was Jamaican, and his mother was from Tennessee, and he was raised by his grandmother in Tennessee until he was a teenager. Then he went to New York City and made quite a name for himself. He went to Lincoln University, which was the same university that Kwame Nkrumah went to, a historically black or African university in Pennsylvania. And Grover Washington Jr. hails from right across the border from where I'm speaking to you from. He's from Buffalo, New York. And the Angola Three have been in the news recently, and two of the people from the Angola Three are still in prison. And Gil Scott-Heron recorded a song way back in 1978 about that prison. Angola, Louisiana Angola is a prison in Louisiana, and I guess it's named after Angola. Angola is a country in Africa where you had a great liberation movement, and you had a woman by the name of Queen Nzinga. But Gil Scott-Heron's Angola, Louisiana, we're going to listen to that right now.
Well, I'm feeling fine. Well, I could have been doing fine. Well, I'm doing fine, thank you. Well, I could have been pulling time. No brother man doing time, and he didn't commit no crime. So, thank you, I'm doing fine. I could have been pulling time. Well, I've been painted a picture. Can't tell a man he ain't got no rights, no where.
to Uhuru Radio. This is Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Richmond, and we were listening to the music of Gil Scott-Heron from 1978. He sang about a notorious prison, which is still in existence in Louisiana. And he was singing about a young man by the name of Gary Tyler, who is still in that notorious prison. And today is the birthday of Charles Mingus. Charles Mingus, who is was a great bassist. I think he was born in Phoenix, Arizona. He grew up in Los Angeles, California, Watts to be exact. And Watts is a spot that produced the high school that they went to was called Jordan High School, and they produced Flo Jo, the great sprinter, the Whispers, Brenda Holloway, the great singer Brenda Holloway, and Jordan High School produced a lot of great minds, and Charles Mingus being one of them. And we're going to be speaking with Jeanette Baker in a few moments, but before we speak to Jeanette Baker, we're going to listen to Curtis Mayfield in a very beautiful song called The Making of You.
Suckle in a great big expression of happiness, boy, you couldn't miss. With a dozen roses, such would astound you, the joy of children laughing around you. These are the makings of you. It is true, the makings of you. The righteous way to go, little one would know or believe if I told them so. You're second to none, the love of all mankind should reflect some sign of these words I've tried to recite. They are close but not quite, almost impossible to do, reciting the makings of you. Way to go, little one would know or believe if I told them so. You're second to none, the love of all mankind should reflect some sign of these words I've tried to recite. They are close but not quite, almost impossible to do, reciting the makings of you.
Yeah. honeysuckle and a great big expression of happiness. Boy, you couldn't miss with a dozen roses. Such would astound you, the joy of children laughing around you. These are the makings of you. It is true, the makings of you. The righteous way to go, little one would know or believe if I told them so. You're second to none, the love of all mankind should reflect some sign of these words I've tried to recite. They are close but not quite, almost impossible to do, reciting the makings of you. Righteous way to go, little one would know or believe if I told them so. You're second to none, the love of all mankind should reflect some sign of these words I've tried to recite. They are close but not quite, almost impossible to do, reciting the makings of you.
Looking for love, somebody true. I looked at you and wanted you only. Looking for love, storybook love, like I've never known.
Looking for love, wanting so much, love's tender touch. When I was so lonely, arms that invite, lips that excite, I call you my own.
Within my arms now I hold you. At last I found the one I could adore. But you're afraid, though I told you. I want you, I want you, I want you forevermore. I always knew,
I always knew
there would be you,
there would be you.
So lonely too,
so.
And wanting to find me,
I'll love you so, I'll love you so.
You'll never go.
You'll never go
looking for love.
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 And you are listening to Uhuru Radio. This is Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. And we just listened to Jesse Belvin and a young woman by the name of Jeanette Baker. And Jeanette Baker is on the line from the City of Angels, Los Angeles, California. Jeanette Baker, how are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I am wonderful.
Good.
We played your song that you did with Jesse Belvin, and you are a fixture in the Los Angeles musical community, and you've been around for many, many moons.
Yes.
And you were on our show a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, with the son of Jesse Belvin, Jesse Belvin Jr.
Yes.
And the song Looking for Love, this sort of like reminds me of when Natalie Cole and Nat King Cole did their duet together. It's put together in a similar fashion. Could you talk about how that song came about?
Well, I was sitting here at my home one day, and the phone rang, and Ron Still called me from Walla Walla, Washington. He had a record company there, and he asked me if I would do a song that he owned by Jesse Belvin. And it was weird because when Jesse died, it devastated me because he was our mentor. All the artists on the West Coast and beyond really looked up to him. He was a wonderful person, and I knew him and his wife and the children, the two boys, and when they were really little. And I couldn't listen to his music after all those years. And when they called me, I was stunned. It was like a Jesse's spirit saying, "Now you got to let go." After all those years, I was still in a grieving kind of way. And so they asked me if I would do this duet and if I played the piano, and I said, yes. They said, well, we're going to have you playing the piano, and Jesse, we're going to do this, and we want to come out there and bring all the equipment to your home so we can record you there. And I said, well, fine, I like that. And then when they got here and set everything up, I said, just a minute, I got to say a little prayer. And I said a prayer, and then I said, I got to say a little, send a little message to Jesse and Joanne. I had said a little prayer then, and asking for their spirits to touch me so that they would be proud of me doing this song. And when I finished the prayer, the engineers and everybody had tears in their eyes, because I was so sincere and because it meant so much to me. And that was the first time in all those years that I was able to listen to Jesse's music. I have his long playing album here that he personally gave me when he did the album with Shorty Rogers and all of them. I think it was on RCA. And we just knew he was going to the top because he was such a great artist and a great guy and very, very talented. And that's how that came about.
And well, I'll say one more thing.
Yes.
2007. And what? 2007. I'll just say one thing about Jesse Belvin. I met Sam Cooke's wife, Barbara Cooke, in Jonesboro, Louisiana. And she took me into this room, and she had this bag, you know, those LP bag. And she showed me the bag, and she said, look at this. So she had all of Sam Cooke's albums, and in the back she had Jesse Belvin. That was the only other singer that she had. But I wanted to let you talk about, you started out with a group called The Dots. Could you talk about your history as a vocalist and a pianist in coming out of Los Angeles. Did you come out of the church, or
how did you get started singing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my whole family's in the business. And I grew up in a show business home where there were musicians and actors and artists in and out of our house all the time. The United Nations actually was in and out of my home. And so I just wanted to, I was in St. Louis one summer and I heard a record by the Platters. And I said, oh, I know a couple of them. I'm going to go back home and start my own group. So I went. I came home, and Big Hug Huggy Boy was in the window at Dolphins of Hollywood there on Vernon and Central, and he was playing records. So I got a little idea. I heard that he was looking for a vocal group. So I went into the store, and I said, I need one more singer. Could you please advertise for a tenor for my group? Because we're going to be recording in a couple of days, and I got to get this other singer. So he looked very, I was lying, of course. So he looked very interested. And he said, well, okay. Well, the next day I had the whole group. And he said, well, look, before you do anything, can you come to this studio? Do you have any material? And I said, yes, we didn't have nothing. We wrote the song on the way to the studio. I wrote the song. And one of those people that came was my husband, Johnny Flamingo, who was artist here on the West Coast and sold a lot of songs on the West Coast. But he was a member of the Dots at that time. Well, at that time, I was friends with Jesse Belvin and all the kids around, Richard Berry, all of us. And we started going into the studio, and it was Don and doing all those guys, Eugene Church, all of them. And we recorded I Confess. I wrote the song on the way to the studio, and I had my group. Johnny Flamingo was one of them, who I later married, and we recorded the song at the studio. It was really funny. I was telling everybody, now, listen to me, and this is the way it's going to go. You do this way. And we went in and recorded it. And the next day, in those days, you know, we had one or two mics. And then Huggy Boy had it on the air 2 days later. And believe it or not, that record sold, and I couldn't believe it. And then Paul Anka, he covered the song. And then my husband went out on his own, and then when I went into the studio again, I called Jesse. I said, Jesse, I need a couple of more people in the group to back me up because Huggy wanted to do some more recording on me. So Jesse came, Gaynell Hodge came, Alex came. That was Gaynell's brother, and we all went into the studio, and we cut a couple of songs, Good Luck to You, Heart Sick and Lonely, and I can't remember if they were on other songs, but Jesse was always there for me, and his wife was always there for me, you know what I mean? And so so we went in and did it. And then I think it was 1960, Jesse Belvin and I, we had the same manager. So
who was
we were
that?
There tonight. Billy
Who
Weavis.
Beg your pardon?
Billy
Who
Weavis.
Was Jesse's manager?
Personal manager, Billy Weavis.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify
so
that.
So then, yeah, because he was also my manager. And he really loved the artists, and he was really for us because we didn't have a Berry Gordy. You know, everybody was taking advantage of us, all the record promoters, Huggy Boy and all of them. They would make money and give us little kibbles and bits. And, you know, I became a leader and started the Los Angeles Club of Recording Artists, where we wanted to demand more money because they didn't have any respect for us. They would advertise us on the radio, wouldn't even call us and tell us where we were working. We had to hear it on the radio to see if we were working every week. And it was a lot of other little things that they did that was in those days, you know, they didn't care about us. They just cared about the money. Well, getting back to Jesse, when Jesse was he was doing such great things, and then when he got the contract and Shorty Rogers playing behind him and everything, we were just enthralled. We were just so happy for him. And then he was booked to go on a tour in the South. And I told my folks, because I got a big mouth and I stand up for people's rights, I said, I don't ever want to go to the South. And it was weird because I felt kind of funny when he got that booking, and it was the first show to be integrated, I think it was in Arkansas.
Yeah, and so Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah, and so when he left, I was at the house, a whole bunch of artists in there to see them off. And and then the next thing we knew, he was killed. Tires were slashed, and Joanne went with him, and they were killed in that car accident. And just nothing ever was the same for me as far as being on the West Coast. What I did is I eventually went to Europe and stayed over there for a while and lived over there for a while. And then I came home. I was working. Then I came home. And, you know, I didn't want to be a part of the oldie but goodie scene, because later on came the doo-wop society. Now, they were instrumental in helping to keep our music alive, but the Mexican people here in California kept our music going. They, in fact, they still buy the records more than any ethnic group here, even more than our own people. They constantly buy in oldies but goodies, and I'm always invited to the Christmas parade to be in it and other functions that they have. They really love our music and they love the artists. Well, I'm able to play Jesse's music now because it looks like it, when that happened, it relieved me from the, I guess you would say, the grief. After all those years, many, many, many years, because that was very devastating to me. I remember at the funeral when we came out the church, there's a lot of people. Josephine Taylor, she was married to Alex, and a couple of other artists were sitting on the steps just boo-hooing. We were all crying. We just couldn't believe it. And it was like we just couldn't understand why our leader and our mentor had to go like that, you know.
Now, good luck to you. Was that the song you said Paul Anka recorded that?
No, I Confess.
I Confess. Okay, well, I was getting ready to say, because Paul Anka is from, was born in Ottawa.
Canada.
And he also sang Good Night, My Love. I guess Jesse Belvin's estate is still getting money for that.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And then after years and years, after I did the song, I inquired about the kids, because I remembered little Jesse running around. He was so cute with his baby bottle in his hand. And you know, we used to pick him up and look at him, and he was real special to us. So when I did the song, and I asked Ron Still, who passed away, he became my publicist and my record producer, and then his son Clarence took over. And I asked him if they knew where Jesse was, and they gave me his number, and I was so happy to find him, you know, because he was like, now that I look upon him, he was like one of my kids.
Right.
You know what I mean? I remembered his whole family, Honey and all of them, and we'd be at that house, and it was happy times and good times, and, you know, and then to have it go down like that. And I was at the house when they left for the road. So, you know, it was really devastating, but he was truly, truly an amazing talent.
I heard L.C. Cook was on this show. Sam Cook's brother has been on this show many times, and he said that he stayed with Jesse and Joanne Belvin when he didn't want to live in Los Angeles, but he mentioned Eugene Church, and he stayed mm-hmm. with Jesse and Joanne Belvin, and he saw Jesse just before he was, I think he was in Atlanta, Georgia, somewhere, and he saw them, and just, you know, days before they were killed. But It's my understanding that when Lou Rawls and Sam Cooke came to Los Angeles, they came and sat at Jesse Belvin's feet because I guess he had to deal with RCA before Sam, and I guess it was Harry Belafonte had it, and then Jesse, and then Sam, right?
Right. Mhm. And Jesse would have been a big star, but then you know I started fighting, kind of standing up for our rights, and I got so upset because most of the artists were for it, but there were a few that crossed our picket line. Ray Charles honored our picket line. And
Ray Charles did honor it?
He honored our picket line.
In
El Monte Legion Stadium, we refused to go on unless they gave us more money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then I went to Europe and did very well because I have all of my people were in the business. My great aunt was Josephine Baker, and my uncle was one of the original Argan comedy stars, and my dad was in movie, sang, and played the drums, and I worked with them. They had a group called the Jackson Trio. My father and uncle were half-brothers, so the trio was Jackson, Eugene Jackson, and so they took the name of the Jackson Trio, and then my cousin sang with Bixie Crawford, sang with Count Basie for a while, and then my cousin Ruth played the drums with the Sweethearts of Rhythm, and so I'm just and my half brother is one of the Foo Fighters, so I came from a very interesting and very talented family.
But Josephine Baker, you don't have to say anything else.
Yeah.
Josephine Baker was internationally renowned. I was talking to someone the other day about how she had gone to Cuba, you know, she was all over Europe, and she adopted about 100 children, had a whole UN in her house, right?
Yep.
I'm exaggerating 100, but it was quite a few children.
About 10, I think, 9 or 10. Maybe 11.
Right.
But, and she lost the Chateau Alande. She lost that, but she kept on going and fighting to the end. And I went over there, and my first gig was in Torino, Italy, at the Le Petit. And then I stayed in Italy for a while, and I went to Paris, and I stayed there for a while, and then I came home. And the thing that really upset me when I got home was the artists were still in the same place, still doing the same thing as when I left. And so I got a bad taste for Oldies But Goodies because a lot of the people wouldn't stand up, and the only one that I knew that really fought to the end with me was Charles Wright of the Watts 103rd Street Band. He's always been for
artists'
rights. Oh, yes. He's got a new CD coming out, and I think it's one of the best he's ever done. And it will be released soon. And I sure wish you could get him on your show. And then getting back to my husband, he was a marvelous person and a wonderful entertainer and singer. And I'm just looking forward. His children are in the process of writing his story. His daughter's writing a book. Is one of his sons who had seen him in a long, had never seen him. He was he was one of the kids that my husband had as a serviceman in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're getting ready to do some things, and I'm going to help them. And I'm getting ready, after I do this CD, to produce a stage production of all the artists from that time, our story. I have most all of their stories that I could tell you from ground up. I'd like to do that in music on the stage. That's where my head is at right now, and getting that produced. And I've put on several children's shows through the years, so now I'm going to be working with teenagers. That's when I met all the artists, when I was a teenager, and tell the story from that era up until now.
Now, let's talk about some of the people. We have about 9 minutes left. Some of the people that made a contribution from Los Angeles in the jazz field, we have, I guess, Dexter Gordon, Melba Liston, who was a great trombone player. We've talked about her a lot on this particular show.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Mingus, and then we had Johnny Guitar Watson, Etta James.
Oh, Johnny Guitar Watson.
The Whispers, Brenda Holloway.
Oh, Brenda's one of my favorite singers. Yeah, Brenda Holloway.
Mm-hmm. And Los Angeles seems to have been lost in the sauce. When people talk about music, they talk about Chicago and,
New
you know,
York,
Chicago
Detroit.
Sound, the Detroit sound, the Philly sound of Philadelphia, and to a lesser extent, New York. But Los Angeles sort of lost it.
Yeah, they didn't give a damn about us on this end. That's because the promoters didn't care about us. I feel like Jesse Belvin should have been Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they're just ignoring him and putting other people and never recognizing him. He was the first one to do the Grammy show, you know what I mean? And he was nominated. He didn't win, but they should have on the very first Grammy show, listen to what I'm saying, and they should have put Jesse Belvin in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame years ago, but they just ignored the West Coast artists, and I don't know why. Because the people here didn't care about us to promote us like Berry Gordy did with the Motown people. You know what I mean? We didn't have a Berry Gordy. And we were like on our own trying to do our thing, and they just won't recognize the talent on this end, and it really blows my mind. And you get to the point where I've tried all these years to do something, and you get to the point where you say, I'm just doing this for nothing. And you know, we run up against walls. You know, Charles was talking about doing something in the Crenshaw area where we would have our own Rock and Roll Hall of Fame here, and that's what we're trying to do now, and Charles has been trying to do this for so long, but every time we get the people together, it's always something comes up, but they can't do this or they can't do that. But I would really like to have you talk to Charles Wright. He can give you a lot of history. I've known him since I was a teenager, and he's a wonderful person, and he's a talented person. His commercials are on TV now with Express Yourself.
But Charles is I think he went to Jordan High School, Jordan out of Watts, and that's the same place that the Whispers and I guess after Jesse Belvin, I guess the biggest person historically to come out of Los Angeles would be Barry White, who played on Earth Angel when he was 11 years old.
And it was something that you said there just a minute ago I wanted to cap on. But, we had a lot of talent here, and I don't know why the people that are on the top in the industry doesn't recognize some of these people. And when I spoke at Richard Berry's funeral, I said that to the audience.
Richard Berry wrote Louie Louie, right, and sang,
yes,
performed Louie Louie. That was one of the biggest songs of all time, right?
And him and Etta did a couple of tunes together back in the day. That
Etta
Roll
James.
With Me, Henry.
Right.
Etta James.
Oh, Roll With Me. I forgot that was Richard Berry, right, yeah.
That was Richard Berry. I'm telling you, I know the whole history of what's happened out here on the West Coast. And I'd like to put that on the stage in music. You know what I mean?
Yes,
and,
ma'am, but we only have about 5 minutes left, and I wanted you to give us your anything else you would like to leave with the audience, and then we're gonna play Good Luck to You. And you're going to come on the show, I guess, when we do our fundraising on May the 6th, but we'll have you back on again because we've only really scratched the surface. I really would like to stay in touch with you.
Oh, I love that. And good luck to you. It was like I wrote that. And I always thought the records that I did as a teenager was, I used to laugh because I'm a song stylist, not a singer. But I have recorded, and I have a record, a CD called Smell the Roses out there, which is with me and Jesse on that. But I'm working on another CD that should be released this summer. And then I'm going to work with young people. I'm going to work with my daughter, Johnny Flamingo's daughter. She's my daughter, too, my half-daughter. I'm going to be recording her and Gladys Broxton. And I this is where my heart is in developing new talent. But I'm still in the business. I'm still gigging. I'm still writing and looking for talent, because I want to put them on the stage to do this musical about the Los Angeles scene back in those days. So that's about it, and I'll probably be working with my stepson too, and all my stepkids are talented, so they'll have a big part in this adventure. And I'm just so glad that we're talking about Jesse, because that was our mentor. And I'm going to work hard after I finish this CD and...
Ulindila pema mkopozi ke unyana wam kelele unyashaza na mza ulindila pela manya uza suba nomona unyana wam utati nenginga yombolu magoti unyana wam e uchongile nisa bahati Pesos, pesos, pulsen, tracks.
the music of Brenda Fassi and Aleta Mbulu. Brenda Fassi, a great vocalist out of South Africa. Vulindela, that was the track we heard, and Aleta Mbulu did Not Yet Uhuru. We're going to be speaking with Abayumi Azikiwe, the editor of the Pan-African Newswire, shortly, and he is going to be discussing the transitions of and the contributions of Kwame Nkrumah and Ahmed Ben Bella. But right now we want to take you to a territory called Nigeria and listen to Fela Kuti and Sandra, Sandra out of Los Angeles, California. This is Upside Down.
is at the Uhuru House at 7911 MacArthur Boulevard. And the theme for today's meeting is Liberate the Schoolhouse, Shut Down the Jailhouse. And it's talking about, we have a special, there's a special speaker. His name is Yoel Velasquez, and he's a leader in Occupy Oakland's Education Committee and the Concerned Parents and Community Coalition, which is challenging the closing of five public schools in Oakland. And, you know, that's unacceptable that that's happening. I mean, we know that there's a struggle to have relevant curriculum, to have schools that are in the interests of the African and Mexican community. But this is not the solution to just shut down schools and leave the communities hanging and powerless. So come on out today. If you want to get in touch with us, you can call us at 510-394-1780. You know, I encourage you to get in touch with us. You can also find us on Facebook, Uhuru Solidarity Oakland, and we want to connect with you. So I'm going to sign off. This has been Wendy Schneider from Uhuru Solidarity Movement Oakland and the African People Solidarity Committee, and look forward to another week of struggle, and won't you join us? Uhuru, Uhuru means freedom.
You'll have an education on Jesse Belvin, but I just wanted to say that Barry White, The Whispers, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, and Brenda Holloway are all in the debt of Jesse Belvin, a great singer, songwriter, producer out of Los Angeles, California. And I would like to thank two people that I always thank, O'Malley Ishitella, for giving me the space on Uhuru Radio, Chairman O'Malley Ishitella, and Archie Shepp, and Archie Shepp was the person that I got the term diasporic music from, and I would like to thank him for his support wherever he is, probably somewhere in Europe, or he might be in Africa. I don't know. Archie travels all over. But if you want to contact us during this broadcast, you can do the email thing at dj@uhururadio.com. And we are in the 21st century. There is a Skype option, which is Uhuru Radio. Telephone, the North American number is 727-565-1599. And if you're calling from the UK, you can call 020-8133-6629. And we're going to continue with a song that Jesse Belvin wrote when he was... Well, he only lived to be 27, but one of the significant things about this song is that Barry White is 11 years old, and he is playing piano on this song called Earth Angel.
Just a fool, a fool in love with you. Earth angel, the one I adore, love you forever and evermore. I'm just a fool. Of your love, loveliness, I hope and I pray that someday I'll be the vision of your happiness. Oh, Earth Angel, Earth Angel, please be mine, my darling dear. Just a fool, a fool in love with you.
I fell for you, and I knew the vision of your loveliness. I hope and pray that someday
get to the real thing.
Yo, DJ Zo.
Earth Angel, Earth Angel, will you be mine? My darling dear, I will love you all the time. I'm just a fool. But I'm just
phone games will be. I kiss like the French to put my tongue in your ear. Do it like the dogs do a girl and pull on your hair. For me a different scenery just means a different position. In the tub or on the sink, I improvise, now listen. In the chopper on the jet, join the mind high glove. I'm no fool, I know money came by me, love.
Mr. Belvin was a
started off really singing in a lot of groups, and this is one of my favorite songs. Jesse Belvin is doing the falsetto. He's singing in the background on this particular song, and when I tried to sing, I could hear. I used to do similar stuff with my voice in the background, but this is a group called The Shields, and Mr. Belvin, Jesse Belvin, is singing the falsetto. It's called You Cheated, You Lied.
You said that you love me. You cheated, you lied. You said that you want me. Oh, what can I do but just keep on loving you?
Girl of my dreams, where are you? Girl of my dreams, I'm so blue, doo-doo-doo. How I yearn, how I long for you. Ooh, doo-doo, if I could just surely than you would understand that it's you I adore forevermore. A love like mine is hard to find. It's fire, it's raging. Although you won't hear my plea, that love